Podcast 3.17, where Alex has a little bit of magic in him. Alex, we have some things to talk about here. First, do you feel slighted that you were not chosen for the MGO starting five?
What was the MGO starting five?
On Twitter today, Seth decided that he was going to come up with the starting five for if MGO Blog was going to put out a basketball team.
Yeah, no, I don't feel bad about that.
But don't you have a strong hoop game?
I could be the Lindsey Hunter of the team.
The Lindsey Hunter?
I know, there's a reference for you.
That's good. Or are you like a 3-point sniper?
I can shoot a little bit from the three, but not much besides that.
Would you be the CJ Baird of this team?
That might be a better comparison. Who was the starting five?
I'm trying to. I think Seth referenced his large butt putting him in the paint.
Yikes!
And
is
Brian,
this an NSFW podcast?
We haven't had one of those, have we? I think usually all of it. I try to keep everything pretty clean. Brian was the stretch four because he's a large man but has a guard's mentality.
Okay.
Ace is a three that snipes and dunks a lot. Apparently, I'm the starting two because I only wear athletic gear. And, wow, there's a noise for you.
Yeah.
And I guess Endless Motor is Matt D was going to be the point guard so that he would make us all look good.
What about Alex Cook? Doesn't he play basketball?
That's a good point. We should maybe Seth just is against all Alexes.
He
Alexa?
Seemed kind of tall the one time I saw him.
I think he's big. I wonder if he has a game.
He's listening to this podcast. Please tell him that's your dimensions.
It would be phenomenal if we got Alex Cook to listen to this podcast. I'm not sure he's a hockey guy.
I don't think he's allowed to listen to hockey in the castle.
Okay, well, I had another question for you, and now we've gotten off topic about it, but I
have a question for you.
Okay.
What happens if the Islanders and the Avs play in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Then I will be very happy, and it will be very enjoyable.
Oh. Who would you cheer for?
I don't know. It would probably depend on the year, and, like, who I think has a better chance to come back. I'd probably root for the opposite team. So I might lean Isles, but I don't know. I grew up an Islanders fan, like, when I was really young, but then they were really bad for, well, all of your lifetime. Yeah. And the Avs have won a couple of cups, but I was probably more of an Avs fan, a Nordiques Avs fan from about 10, when I was 10 on. Anyway.
It's the question I'm asking myself for when the Red Wings and Senators meet in the playoffs
you
for
can't
5
claim.
Years.
It's great that you're like, trying to become a Senators fan, but it's too early for you to claim them. You have to be like, all right, I'm getting interested in them. And then, like, if you can make it the rest of the year and maybe next year, then you can claim it to be a Senators fan. Or are you just a hipster and you're, like, trying to get on board before it's cool? Are you paying this forward?
We'll discuss this after the podcast.
Okay.
I have to stay micromanaged on the task at hand.
Okay, so the next thing we have to bring up is, how was your trip to Indy? And was it a better experience than I had in the land of the ridiculous?
It seems like it. I mean, your setup seemed to be pretty bad.
I mean, I don't want to complain because, like, I got to go.
We had, pretty good shot of the, angle of the court.
You were a distance away. You sent me a picture.
I mean, we weren't.
Did you expect to be closer?
We weren't courtside, but that was actually pretty good for us. I mean, that's a lot closer than we are at Chrysler or...
And at Yost when you're in the
Breslin
corner.
At Breslin or at Assembly Hall where you're in the rafters hanging by your feet.
Wow. They put you upside down?
The media section at Assembly Hall is like the last row in the stadium, and Assembly Hall is the sides are vertical. So you look straight down on the court.
Like a blimp view?
Which, by the way, we should note that other student media members of the Michigan community got to sit in the press box, which was like 1,000 feet away from the court, whereas we got to be pretty close. So take that, Daly. I think they were closer on day...
Thinly veiled shot.
I think they were closer on day one, and then they were way up high on day two. But we got to be close on both days.
That was like when Bailey was on the podcast last year, and she's like, yeah, some players... For Michigan, the previous year, never won to get back on defense, Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
But overall, it was fine. You know, the second game was definitely interesting. I did not see the comeback coming.
I don't think anyone did.
No, pretty surprising. We also got to see Iowa Elvis. I have photos if you want to see.
Boise State has Elvi. Elvi, I think they have plural.
Multiple Elvises?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this guy was in a full Elvis jumpsuit, black and gold, Hawkeye logo on the front, Iowa emblazoned in gold on the back, rhinestones, a wig, sunglasses, the whole thing. And he was taking photos with Iowa fans. So it was quite a sight to see. That's pretty much the summary of my trip. Went to...
Were you at the game, the Michigan-Rutgers 2019 game? It was a home game here.
I don't think so. It doesn't ring a bell.
There were like 10 Elvises that had like migrated up above the student section because it had cleared out by the second half. I think Michigan actually shut them out or almost shut them out, blew them out of the game anyway.
Oh, were we talking about football?
Yeah, for football.
Yeah, I was at that game.
Do you remember all of the
Elvises? No, I don't remember the Elvises.
There was like 10 of them, and then they played an Elvis song. So they all started like gyrating and dancing and whatever.
That was the game that we fired Chris Ash.
Was it?
Yeah, he was fired the next day. It was like, what, 52-0, I think?
The 78-0 game?
No, 52-0 at the Big House last year.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
What about your time in South Bend?
Well, that was different. Apparently, you can only pick up your credential an hour before the game, and then there were three games on Sunday, and then once the game starts, the people with the credentials leave. So if you show up not in that window, they can't give you a credential. So I went early. It was during, it was probably like 1:30, and I was turned away from picking up my credential because no one was there. So I couldn't even go in and watch the game. So I went back to my hotel room. The guy's like, come back between 3 and 4. So I came back between 3 and 4, came in. He's like, oh, yeah, we got your credential right here. So he handed it to me. I went in, walked around, checked out the seating, came back. The next day, we walked in, and they would not give us the credential and then wouldn't allow us to wait inside.
So it was a different credential for every day?
Yeah.
Oh.
Which was...
That's weird.
Odd. And they wouldn't even let us wait inside. And it was like snowing. So we had to go sit in the car for like 20 minutes. And then we came in, we were like 2 minutes early. So they're like, all right, well, we won't kick you out. But they wouldn't like open the doors for anyone else. It was the weirdest thing. And the guy was like trying to explain to us that, well, everyone who's already in there is going to have to leave anyway because they're going to have to wipe everything down and clean, which is not even remotely close to being true because I was in there the previous day and no one left. Everyone just milled around and there was food and just kind of sat there on their phones and talking to people.
Sounds like a trip to Michigan State.
Well, we weren't even in the press box. So, like, there's a nice press box there. It's a very nice arena. Like, if you could go back for a game when they allow fans or even just as media, it looks like it would be a great place to watch a game. But they posted us up behind the goal, like, in the concourse. And so, like, the bar is up, like, the top of the net, and then the net, and you're, like, trying to look through that, and so... Like, the one guy on Twitter is like, asking me, hey, what did you think of that penalty? And I'm like, I don't know, man. You probably had a better view than I did. And then I tried to go in and get shot charts because they had them. And I haven't had them. That's what I've done for 5 years is, like, breaking down the different shot charts. And I had to argue with the guy to give me one. And I'm like, he's like, well, these are only for teams. He's like, who are you? I was like, well, I'm media. I'm like covering the game. He's like, well, if I give one to you, I have to give one to all the different members of the media. And I'm like, there's literally like four people down there and none of them even know that you can walk in here. And he's like, well, we'll see. So I like looked at his friend and his friend just handed me one. I was like, this is the most ridiculous experience I've ever had as a member of the media by far.
Yeah, that's not great. I mean, when we were in Spartan Stadium in 2018 for that game.
You were outside for the weather.
Yeah, we were on the radio deck, and we just went up to the press box to get, you know, rosters and stuff like that, you know, the packet of information. And the lady is like, you're not allowed to be up here. It's like, we're just getting one of these. And she's like, okay, fine, you can get it, but you have 30 seconds to get it and get back in
the
elevator.
Wait, 30 seconds?
Yeah, she's like, I'm going to watch you. And,
did she have a stopwatch?
And then, like, it was two people, me and one other person were up there, and... Then we were grabbing multiples. We had four people on the crew, and she's like, you're taking too many. And we're like, we have four people. And it's like a free media packet.
The best thing about that was they didn't have free food for the media. Do you remember this?
At where?
At State.
Oh, yeah, they never do. They give you the $5 hot dog coupon.
Right, so you
get... But you have to pay extra for ketchup or cheese for the pretzel.
So they gave us two,
yeah.
I remember. And everybody used theirs really early before the game. And I think I saved mine. Maybe I'd gotten food on the way up or something. And I'm sitting there, and now there's a delay. So there's like an hour delay in the middle of the game, and everybody's getting hungry. So I almost started auctioning it off on like on Media Row, and was like seeing who would wanted to buy my.
No one hates media like Michigan State hates media.
Maybe Notre Dame hockey or the Big Ten. So maybe we should get into the games.
Maybe.
The first thing I want to say is, did you see the Corsi from the Minnesota Michigan State game?
Yeah.
It was like 82-27.
Yeah.
That's absurd. And that was even strength. Like, I didn't even look at what the total was.
So, one thing about Michigan State is that they're very different from Notre Dame, in that Notre Dame plays a tight defensive style that's disciplined and coached in a certain way.
Sure.
Michigan State doesn't do that. Michigan State basically has the philosophy that we cannot score more than one goal in a game. And so if we get the first goal, we are done with offense for the day.
Six goalies.
It's just,
we're shutting it down.
I mean, they got that early goal on the power play in that game against Minnesota and then literally did not even attempt shots, like in the entire third period.
Yeah, they had like 10 to 15 shots in the first period and finished the third period like 22 or something.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. I mean, I don't know how you can play a team even and then just like, okay, we're done. Like,
do you think if they would have given up a goal, like, I don't know, in the late first or second period, that they would have then obviously had to?
Well, they would have had to, yeah,
a little
more. I think so.
Or would they have just extended this as long as you could?
I don't
know.
Because
it's not the regular season anymore where you can be like, oh, well, we can go to overtime and get points.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's just astonishing to watch.
I don't think I've ever seen 75% even strength Corsi. I mean, I've looked at a bunch of games, and Michigan's played some bad teams, and I don't think I've seen it.
I mean, it's basically, we're just going to put five guys around the net and block all the shots, and then we'll clear it, and then we'll go for a change, and the new guys will come out, and they'll assume the position, and then we'll block shots, then we'll clear it, and we'll go for a change.
It's just like a shooting gallery, then. All right, I'm just going to go be a target.
Yeah, it's...
Just get hit by pucks all day.
Ridiculous.
Sort of like Adam Sandler in Happy Gilmore when he just stands in front of the pitching machine.
And Michigan State was very close to pulling the upset we needed. They were only about 5 minutes
away.
Yeah,
that would have been nice. I would have taken that. The last point of news, and then we've our intro is
well, there's not much to talk about with this
first
game. Yeah.
But the last point I wanted to bring up was the fact that Michigan men's tennis beat Ohio State over the weekend for the first time since 2001.
Woo!
What were you doing in 2001?
Not having a coherent memory of 9/11.
Were you walking?
I don't know. I don't remember 9/11 or 2001 or what other things happened in 2001. George W. Bush's inauguration. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't have memories of any of those things. So, Mariano Rivera blowing the save in Game 7 of the World Series.
Oh, to who?
The Diamondbacks.
Yeah, but who got the hit? Come on.
Was he a shortstop?
No.
No.
He was having the year of his life, probably because he was on steroids.
2014, me knew this, but I...
Luis Gonzalez.
Luis Gonzalez. I was thinking it was a Luis, but
it was a bloop because the infield was in.
Yep.
So if the infield's back, Jeter probably runs under it and catches it.
Man. Anyway,
hey,
good for tennis.
Expansion teams winning. Yes, that is a big deal for Michigan's men's tennis. They are very good. They've played well this year. I think their roster's pretty stacked. We'll probably get in some tennis down the line. When hockey and, well, yeah, hockey and basketball are done, we
that's
can
when this becomes a baseball cast.
Baseball and softball cast, yeah. And tennis cast, apparently, according to our buddy Bill Rapai, who has asked for more tennis. So that is...
You know who else beat Ohio State this weekend?
Michigan!
Hockey.
Oh, that's the same one.
Yeah.
Okay, good call. Yes, hockey did beat Ohio State in a game that was close for about 5 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
at least skating wise,
there
not
was nothing.
The
I mean, we were 100% justified in wanting Ohio State and not Michigan State.
Yes,
those two games on Sunday demonstrate that.
Yes, so Strauss Mann starts in net, which is a surprise to no one. And the second note I have written down was Keaton Pearson had a really bad drop defensive zone turnover, like in the first 2 or 3 minutes, and a guy steps in and shoots from probably below the dot.
Which, by the way, there was an even better version of that in the Canucks Senators game last night. Colin White was against the boards, and he
trying to
put
convince
it,
everyone you're a Senators.
No, I'm just talking about this in general. He was against the boards and put it between his legs. It was literally the best centering pass I've ever seen, and it was not even weighted a shot. I mean, it was a one-time blast for the opponent right in the slot.
So my point in bringing this up is that when I got the shot chart, that was about the only chance even remotely near the net that Ohio State had in the first period came right off of that.
Yeah, pretty much.
That was it. I mean, Ohio State kind of moved up and down the ice with Michigan for the first 10 minutes. But after that, Michigan just kind of took the puck and went into the offensive zone and drew a penalty, took a few shots, had chances. Ohio State would get the puck clear, but this was sort of, it started like that first game against, or when they played in Ann Arbor, where it was like 1-0 or 1-1 for a portion of the game, but yep. Michigan's just in control. And then Michigan gets a goal on the power play on their first attempt.
Yep.
They get one chance. York gets the puck over to Brisson by the dot, and he unleashes
it. It wasn't even a great setup.
Well, it was just a movement,
yeah.
I guess.
I didn't even think it was a great pass. Really.
Not like
it was
the Beniers to Summers against Minnesota, yeah. And he finishes that. It's 1-0, and you're like, well,
this game's over.
Not quite. We're not playing Michigan State, but it's pretty well in hand. And like Ohio State's Corsi at the end of the first period was like 8 and then 2 from the house, and one of them was that one that I referenced. Yeah. So they didn't really even create a whole lot. The second period started off great for Michigan, as this was one of the prettiest goals that we've seen in a while, but KJ enters the zone and drops it off to Morgan, who just picks it up right in stride and fires the puck, and maybe it's going wide, I can't really tell, but Cam York has positioned himself at the back post, and it goes off of York and into the net for the Ann Arbor special of the Morgan and York goal.
Yep, and once it was 2-0, then it was really over.
Yeah, then that was over. And I mean, it was more than just the goal, right? I mean, Ohio State rarely had possession at all. They got a couple chances later on, but it just didn't feel like... It just felt like man's going to make the saves, or they're going to turn the puck over. I mean, it felt like a typical Michigan-Ohio State game from this season.
I don't remember any of the other things that happened this game, except for the Luke Morgan face masking penalty late in the game, which was really the only intrigue to wake us up from, like,
you don't want
to, let's just fast, like, this is the, in, you know, NHL 21, this is where you simulate forward to play the next real game.
You don't want
right?
to talk
like,
about,
once you got the two goalie, it was like, okay, let's just bring on Minnesota.
You don't want to talk about the horrendous neutral zone turnover then when Ohio State decides to go for a change and Michigan has an entire
three or four on one.
The people were talking about how pretty that goal was, and it was, but like, it's just, it's a warm-up play, right?
Yeah,
where
just
you
like
just have people that come into the zone, and there's one guy on defense that's just spinning in a circle, and...
Four-on-ones can happen sometimes if there's just a certain situation where, you know, you're in the offensive zone, and all your forecheckers get really low, and then the opponent's got their forwards out high, and there's, you know, a shot that gets blocked or something, and it's a rush the other way. That can happen if you're pressing...
Yeah.
4-on-1 doesn't happen at your own blue line after a turnover.
I mean
what?
Don't you just wait till the puck is dumped in to change? Or have you just decided, all right, we've hit the blue line, the guy's probably going to get the puck deep, so all right, to the bench, guys.
My two thoughts from this game. One is about the Morgan thing in a minute.
Yeah, we'll,
the other
we'll
one
talk about
is
that.
Just I mean, we'll probably do an episode at the end of the year going over each team's season, but wow, is Ohio State bad, especially from what they've been in recent years. I mean, I don't know how they got this bad, but
yeah,
this isn't like, well, it's just a total collapse in every facet.
So they had a couple of draft picks that had played for 4 years.
I knew they were going to step back, and I predicted that at the start of the season, but I didn't think it was going to be like this. I mean, this is...
Yeah.
I mean, they got a lot of work to do next year, I'll just say that.
I don't know if they have any recruits coming in. I mean, that's
they don't have
not
a ton of talent to begin with, but
yeah.
I mean, they got a good coach.
Well, they
got 4 years. Made the tournament, well, 3 straight years, and
they made the Frozen Four.
Wow!
And remember that year they owned Michigan. Like Michigan
well,
could
they
not
were basically as good as Michigan, and then
and won all
you
five
flipped
games.
A coin and it landed heads five times, basically.
I mean, okay.
Michigan was kind of bad at the beginning of the year, though. So
their defense and penalty kill were were not great.
It was a bad matchup because Ohio State was great on the power play, and Michigan was terrible on the penalty.
And their penalty kill that year, Ohio State's penalty kill was like 90%.
They were top 10 in special teams both sides. But anyway, surprising how bad Ohio State is.
Do you have a take on Napier? Like, this is probably the last time
we're
going to
see him. He just got left out to dry a lot. I mean, I've heard there were some internet scouts saying that he's going to get some NHL looks, which, okay. But I don't, I mean, goalies are so weird, so I can't really say if he'll turn out good or not. But he was playing an impossible job this year.
Michigan, well, he did a good job stopping Michigan at the end of that second period.
I mean, that was the second game with that first one back in Ann Arbor that I thought he did a good job of just keeping Ohio State in a game they end up losing handily.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, and the next, I mean, the second period, third period, they all kind of play out the same. At one point, I think I texted you, and I was like, all right, you're taking over notes for this game. And then it worked out because I was starting to write a little bit of stuff down, and that's when there was a scuffle after the game, after it was 3-0, I think, and there was a scuffle after the whistle. And it's weird because, like, that was kind of the only thing that was going to get Ohio State back into the game if Michigan did something, like, abhorrently ridiculous, like take a 5-minute major on something that was completely unnecessary, and then they did.
Yeah.
So you had a better...
He got called for face masking, which I guess
have
is...
Have you heard of that before?
No, not really.
Okay.
Which is when you, like, remove the opponent's face mask.
Like, from the helmet?
Well, so what he did was he pushed, like, upwards on the bottom of the face mask, and so the helmet got pushed back, and then the face mask slipped up below the chin, and his whole face was exposed. Like, the helmet was almost all off.
After the play.
After the play.
So there's not, like, danger.
Not really, no. Which is why I tweeted that he should have just gotten in a full-on brawl. I mean, if you're going to get a five-minute major, you might as well get your money's worth.
It feels like a little bit like...
We needed a Cutler-Martin situation to wake us up in that game.
This feels like the guy just, like, yapped at Morgan all game or all year, and it was sort of like the Daryl Morsell thing, like, where Maryland's only chance in that game against Michigan really was, like, to get under their skin.
Hey, Mel Pearson should have fought Steve Rolick. That would have woke the game up, too.
Would it have been more entertaining than watching the attempt at hockey? Do you remember the MGO podcast when they demanded that Mark D'Antonio and Jim Harbaugh have a full-on WWE?
Yeah. That's what we needed in this game. And the only other interesting note was that Ohio State pulled the goalie with 6.5 minutes left.
Because they were on the power play.
Which, if you show that to, let's say you go back in time and you just show that to an 80s coach, back when they would pull the goalie with like 25 seconds left, their head might explode. Like, full on looking at the lost arc with no sunglasses while it's open. Just.
Do you remember the Providence-Miami game in the tournament from, like, I think it was the 2015 playoffs, where Providence was up on Miami, and Miami was a one seed, so Providence is the four. And ironically, they're hosting, so they're the four, and they're hosting the one seed.
They won the title that year, right?
Providence?
Yeah.
Was
that the year they won it all?
Yeah, because they beat Eichel.
Yeah.
So they're up, like, 4-1 in the third, and Miami starts pulling the goalie with, like, 12 minutes left. Because they're on the power play, so they keep getting these power plays. And Providence comes close to scoring an empty net goal for about a good 10 minutes and just cannot. And Miami's guys are, like, diving back, knocking the puck to the side, and then they would draw another penalty. And it was almost like the NCAA is like, we can't, like, have the one seed lose, even though that's a thing now. And finally, Providence gets an empty netter and, like, hangs on to win, like, 5-3 of, like, a 4-1 game in just this absolutely bananas, like, 10 minutes of, like, one team doesn't even have a goalie, and they're still in the game and scoring to, like, close the deficit.
And even with the 6-on-4 for several minutes, Ohio State gets nothing. No real...
Well, they got shots.
They got shots, but...
But nothing that was, like... Yeah, man, so, wasn't, like, making these tremendous saves.
Yeah.
And he gets a shutout, which, I mean, does it count as a shutout when you shut out Ohio State?
I don't know. Maybe.
Two-thirds? What would you get if you shut out Michigan State? Nothing?
So, that was this game.
Yeah, I think, is the segment over?
Yeah.
Was most of it just the intro?
Yes.
That's okay. I think people saw that coming.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
I think that's like...
Aren't you supposed to be fired up? You were pretty heated last night.
I was deflated last night. I was frustrated. Well, first of all, it's like the game, the Wisconsin-Penn State game goes into overtime, so we're going to start late. And oh, the guy that wouldn't let us in didn't think we would be able to get in until 8:30. And I was like, well, what time is this one starting? And then, so it's really late. Because of the delayed start, which wasn't even that delayed, and then you have the collapse, and then you go to overtime, and then lose, and then like I'm trying to gather my thoughts and like write something coherent at like 11 something o'clock, and then I knew that I had to leave the next day, so I couldn't just kind of like make it through work like doing my job, but like kind of checked out mentally because I knew I have to get everything done and then leave, and I was like, this was like planned in the worst possible way that the outcome happened, but. It was just, the ending was just very, I don't know, deflating. So I was frustrated and then ran out of energy. But the first two periods were good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they got a 2-on-1, like, right into the game. And I think that you said to me, what did you share with me? You were like, it would be great if we didn't, like, bury the 2-on-1.
Morgan, well, because it was Luke Morgan and Beniers, right? And Morgan keeps it and then shoots it into
his chest. And you're like, hey, maybe pass it to Beniers and let him do that from the slot. But just, like, right after that, Michigan gets a penalty. So it's power play, I'm sorry. It's a little bit like that second Minnesota game where Michigan started with a bang and got some odd man rushes and power plays. And so they're up, well, they had a good chance. They draw a penalty, and really quickly, I think it was like 10 or 15 seconds into the power play, you get a tic-tac-toe from Beniers down to Becker, who's like getting points now, by the way.
Well, when you play on the power play with those guys,
but
he scored points.
He scored against Arizona State. He scored against Minnesota, and he has a great pass up from the goal line to the slot, and KJ just beats LaFontaine over his left shoulder, I think, in the open net, and it's 1-0, and you're like, hey, this is a start. I'll take this.
Yeah.
Right? And then, like, right after that, the line comes back out, and you get one of their patented forever shifts, where KJ and Beniers just basically hold the zone for what seems like forever, and guys are changing behind them, just skating around, getting the puck across. I mean, Minnesota's just chasing, and you're like, I mean, we're starting to, like, take over this game.
Yeah, and then you have to kill penalties for a while.
Jeez, were those legit? Those are on the other end, but they just seemed
tell
a little
tell me what
like,
they were again.
Well, the one was the Truscott interference.
Yeah, that
which I thought was Summers.
It was. Oh, no, but Summers then went to the box first, and then they yanked him out, and they put Truscott in, because Truscott was the right guy. They put Summers in, and they showed the replay, and I was like, well, they got the wrong guy.
Do you think
and then
was,
they panned back, and then they were switching spots, and I was like, okay,
now they got
it. Do
you think this was the event staff that was doing that?
That was, those are so tough because that was almost identical to the Blankenberg one later in the game where they get tangled up and the forward is like, whoa, you know.
Sort of like a flopping
leaning warning. Backwards and then they kind of go down and it's like, well, was he interfering with them?
But did the guy have the puck though?
He had kind of sent it down the boards and you go to hit him a little late and then it makes a scene because he falls backwards and you always grit your teeth and you're like, oh no, please don't call that. And then you're like, oh, darn it.
And then the next one was the
Kent Johnson closing his hand around the puck.
Yeah, that I thought was a hook. But because the guy made like a weird little motion and then they
he definitely, I mean, he caught it and was like, Oh, whoa. And then threw it, right? It's like a hot potato.
What was that? Can you do that again? you just made like a jiggly...
The very visual podcast.
...motion around your belly and then threw your hands
up. Well, because I was reenacting it. He catches it, and then it's like a hot potato thing, yeah. Right? Like, you catch it, you're like, oh, I've got it now. What do I do now? And then you throw it, right? So it wasn't just like, whoa,
so
throw
it. So is that closing your hand around the puck?
I don't think he closed it, but like you're not supposed to catch the puck and skate with it like you're a wide receiver.
Did he mean to?
Sometimes
the puck just... Like if the puck gets like caught...
It wasn't caught in him. It was definitely... He catches it, he skates a little bit, and then he's like, oh, I need to get rid of this, and then it's just tough.
And they needed to help Minnesota out a little bit? That one was a little trickier because that was the one where they couldn't get the puck out of the zone.
Yeah.
And it was like those couple of times two weekends ago where Minnesota doesn't score on the power play, but they have the puck in the zone the whole time and Michigan can't get a change. And then like everybody just stops moving because your legs are now fried and then you get a shot from a good spot. And I was kind of expecting that, but it didn't happen. They ended up getting the clear finally. And changing, because as you pointed out in the last podcast, a penalty kill does not end until the next change.
Yep.
Which is a really good point. I like that. So they kill those off, and then you're feeling pretty good, right? Because you're like, hey, we just killed off two penalties. We probably got to get another one at some point coming here. And you get like a really nice play from Pasta and Brisson on some like 1-2 stuff, and JLF ends up having to make a couple of big saves. Beniers got a chance in close. I mean, Michigan was the better team, I think, in the first period. And it was really only even-ish because of those two power plays for Minnesota.
Yep.
And then you get a 3-on-2 that Mann actually makes a pretty nice save on. The interesting thing was, I don't remember, like, and maybe this was because he was at the other end, but I don't remember him making some phenomenal save, but he just was always in the right spot, making the necessary saves. It seemed like the defense shielded guys to points where Mann's like, all right, I've got to get from here to here, and the defense put him in those positions and made the stop. It was like they're working together or something.
Yeah.
See, that was kind of a joke. Oh, there you go.
I mean,
see, now you laughed. But I was, and of course he ended up being really even, and I think maybe that's because of like what happened late in the period, but I thought Michigan was just a better team, and if they could get
They
one
were the
more,
better team through 40 minutes.
Yeah. Well, spoiler, because now we're going to talk about the second period. So that starts off really well, too, because like right after the opening faceoff, Garrett Van Wy gets down the side on a sort of a semi 2-on-1 and gets a good shot and doesn't score.
Yeah.
Which is just another one. Michigan ended up with, I think, 5 in total transition opportunities to Minnesota's 3, and Minnesota's were 3-on-2s. And there's a big difference between a 3-on-2 and a 2-on-1.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, just because there's so much more ice, and if there's any talent on in your rush at all, you can do so much more with
it. Well, 2-on-1's highly lethal. 3-on-2 can be good if you have passing. 4-on-3 is kind of cluttered, and 5-on-4 is a power play. So, you know, it...
I like how you have this broken down. Do you have a flow chart for this?
The more players you add, the harder it gets to consistently get grade A chances.
So right after that, Thomas Bortolo tried to go full Mike Legg.
I hate what this has become.
Am I stressing you? Is this overwhelming?
It's now just like, I mean, Trevor Zegras did this in his first game the other day for the Ducks. It was more like 2 weeks ago, but whatever.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, all these accounts are like, Trevor Zegras almost got his first goal on him, like, you know, the lacrosse goal or whatever. And it's like, no, he didn't. Like, he tried it and it didn't go in and it wasn't really close.
So,
like,
did he, like, actually attempt it, or was
he went up to do it, and then, like, the goalie was there. I mean, okay. It's like, okay, that's not a highlight, though. That's just, I got the puck. I'm like, obviously, everyone's doing it now. It's not even cool that anyone attempts it. Show me when it works.
That's what I want to hear. I don't even know how you pick the puck up that way. Do you?
I don't know. Not easy.
Anyway. But, so, Bortolo gets it, and is, I think if the defenseman isn't there, which is probably a big if, but like he scores because I think he has the corner, but the defenseman basically
Brock
comes Faber's over and
right
like, just like checks him down.
It's just for the amount of talk it gets, it's not that exciting anymore. And a lot of guys try it now. It doesn't work very often. And yet people get very excited even when it's tried.
Man, what have you done lately for Alex? Tell you what.
Do normal stuff.
Do normal stuff. Like score on a power play. Or kill it off and Michigan did that earlier. They got a second power play, and this one wasn't great. I think it came. It was almost necessary because Minnesota was starting to like get back in the game. They were ratcheting up pressure. They were winning cycled play in the end, and Michigan was dodging some bullets. You could just see like guys skating in circles around the Michigan players, or the Gophers were. And then Beniers gets the puck and gets pulled down, and you're like, hey, that's got to be a hook, and it was. And that evened out the penalties at two, and that was like almost a relief because Minnesota was starting to get some stuff going, I think, in the second period, and then Michigan gets out of it with that. They don't really score some zone time and stuff. Their zone time's been better. I mean, there was a time, remember, for a few games where getting the puck across the opposing blue line was like you'd have to pay someone to do it. But now they seem to be getting in the zone, and kind of like in the first couple games, like they score so early that there's not even like a lot of stuff going on. So you can't even really evaluate it other than, oh, they had a nice play.
Yeah.
Anyway, York ends up getting tripped and they get a third one. So now like there's a plenty of chances. This one wasn't as great. They got zone time again. And this was the one, I think, down on the far end where Blankenberg had a shot from the slot that maybe it got tipped, but it looked like, at least from my angle, he had about half of an open net and it just sort of fluttered over the bar. And maybe it got deflected, but that was, again, right on that verge of like, hey, if we can get that second goal. And then right at the end of the period, Michigan gets, I believe, their third transition opportunity. This time it's a 4-on-2, and I didn't see how this one developed.
No, I didn't really go back and look.
But they come into the zone with basically the entire Van Wy line and a defenseman, and the puck is pinging around, and Van Wy gets to the net and stuffs it once, and I think LaFontaine makes a save and gets a second poke, and it slips between his legs. And it's 2-0, and there's only a couple minutes left in the second, and you're thinking, I mean, this has gone about as good as you could ask for.
The Van Wy line plus Summers scoring on an odd man rush. Remember, do normal stuff like that. But
is that normal?
Yes.
When was the last time that happened? Has that ever happened? And all these guys are like juniors. So, again, like the Corsi of that period was pretty much even. It was like 17-17. House attempts were like 7-6. I mean, you're playing a relatively even game, but Michigan took their chance on their power play. They got a great look in the first period. They took advantage of their chance in transition. I mean, that's how you win these kinds of games, right? Is that it's not just out-offensing or defensing someone in the zone, but it's like, hey, if you can catch them in transition or they're going to give you a chance in special teams, that's how you finish it. Those are sort of the edges that they talk about, right?
Yeah, I mean, Michigan goes into the third period with a two-goal lead. But the two-goal lead is the most dangerous lead in sports. And
then they get a chance.
Because you think you are way ahead, and you're not. And only one goal, and suddenly it's a one-goal game. And, I mean, you knew Minnesota was going to come out. They were going to have an onslaught at some point, and you were going to have to try and weather it.
Well, they almost had a 3-0 lead, and this was the turning point in the game for me, was you had KJ and Beniers came in with Morgan, so that entire line. And it's weird because KJ crosses the blue line and slows down on a 3-on-2. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this is one of those things where I'm like, all right, he's about to take off his skate and like do a dance and then fire the puck with his other hand and like one of his fancy moves. And he just sort of, like you said, do normal things. And then he starts to speed up after slowing down to allow his wingers to get deeper, gets the puck to Beniers on the left side, which draws the attention of the two like Gopher defenders, who gets it back across sort of to Morgan on the right side, who are already deeper in the slot. And Morgan has half an empty net to shoot at, and LaFontaine comes out of nowhere and goes post to post and robs him. And you're just like, oh, that was it. Like, that was the game. That goes in. It's 3-0, and the Gophers are probably, at that point, dead. But LaFontaine, like, comes back from the other side of the post.
I mean, probably. But also, you know, Michigan then will give up a goal. But, the Avalanche didn't come after that. I mean, that was an opportunity that Michigan had to go up 3 goals, but I don't necessarily see it as a major turning point.
But my point is, like, it's a really good save. Yep. And if he doesn't make that save, it's 3-0. It's not like, oh, well, we'll just come back and score 3 goals like we have all game. I mean, it's not like they were getting these amazing chances and they weren't going in.
Yeah.
It was, this is like, if I don't make this save, it's probably done. And sure, he does. And then within, a couple minutes, you have a point on I called it an odd man rush. Was it an odd man rush?
Something happened. Michigan's defense got broke down. Power had to make a do or die play to cut off
the boards, right? Like
cut off
a
passing lane, and he couldn't quite get his stick on it. And then it becomes an abbreviated 2-on-1
in the zone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's Burke that walks in and just scores on man 5 hole. There was a guy that was tweeting me about it, about how that wasn't a great goal. And like, I think the rule is sort of like you can't get beat 5 hole. Is that what it is? Like,
I don't really know. I'm not a goalie expert.
You're just a everything else expert.
It was a great opportunity.
It was a great opportunity. So. I'm not taking anything away from that. It's the defense's fault for allowing that, so to speak. But I don't know. I've always heard, like, I played enough goalie in soccer and stuff, like, you can't get beat in your post is the rule. And generally, people make fun of you if the ball goes between your legs. So, like, I guess that's what I take away from it is, like, if you make the guy go far side and make him pick the post or the corner and, you know, I don't know. It was a really good chance. Minnesota took advantage of it, and it's 2-1. And then things start to get a little hairy because a few minutes later, Michigan takes a penalty again, and this is the one you're referring to, right? The Blankenberg one?
Yeah. This seemed a little softer to me, but Blankenberg's not a big guy, and he just doesn't put a lot of dudes on their backs very often.
He's not an offensive tackle?
Yeah. I don't know. Again, it's one of those where you watch it and you're like, oh no. And then they call it and you're like,
And I probably would have bet a lot of money that Minnesota was going to score then, because it just seemed like the momentum was in their favor. They have a decent power play. They've scored power play goals against Michigan a couple weeks ago, and Michigan kills it.
Yep. They do enough to kill it. And then they get a chance afterwards.
Oh, my goodness, right? Like, I don't even remember how. I think there was a puck that goes, like, across, and Bortolo gets his stick on it, but he's at the end of his shift. And so normally you're like, if you're going to pick a player on Michigan's team on a breakaway that you want, so essentially your shootout shooter, I mean, who's your number one?
I mean, probably Bortolo, but maybe Kent Johnson.
Maybe Beniers. Like, one of those guys. But yeah. So this isn't, like, the situation. Remember where there was, like, a stretch where, like, Luke Morgan kept getting breakaways? This is not that. This is other than he didn't have any legs left. And you had made the comment that was very obvious because...
Well, because the Gopher defenseman is gaining on him.
Yeah.
And he is running out of steam. And then Blankenberg, who's out of the box, has got fresh legs. And he just comes flying into the play. And Bortolo is just kind of like, I don't know what to do now. Like, is this a 2-on-0? Is this a... Like,
yeah.
All of a sudden, like, my teammate's in the play, and he just kind of slows down and freaks out. And then the chance ends up not being that great.
Yeah, he kind of takes a backhanded chance with a guy sort of on his shoulder that, I mean, LaFontaine just sort of paddled away a little bit. Like, it wasn't really threatening at all. And it was, I remember because there was a media guy that was probably about 10 feet away from me. And when he sees Bortolo tip the puck and come in, and you can see from that angle that Bortolo is going to get there and be in alone, like, he stands up and, like, I think he knocks over, like, a pad or something because there's, like, a sound that happens over there. And he's like, oh, this is it, you know? And I kind of, like, was, like, leaning forward, and then the chance was like, what was that?
Yeah.
And that was, like, again, like, this is... Michigan had chances to put this away. They had that 3-on-2. They had this sort of breakaway that maybe wasn't as great as it appeared at first. And they didn't. And, you know, in order to exterminate rodents, you have to kill the gopher. You can't just keep him... like, sort of there.
I mean, you get down to 5 minutes, 4.5 minutes left, and Michigan still got the one goal lead.
Right.
They're still playing well, and they still seem to be the odds-on favorite to win the game.
It seemed like they were over the hump.
Yeah.
Because there's a
point
where...
They'd gotten past the penalty kill.
Right. And
the only thing left to weather was going to be the last minute of the game with the empty net.
Right. And it didn't even get there. And this was like... You know, we argued a little bit about this when you said I was, like, worked up or whatever, but... I was a little fired up about this one, but so Sampo Ranta, who is everyone's favorite player, and I will be rooting for as soon as he signs his contract with the Avalanche, but shoots a puck that, I don't know, people say maybe it was deflected by Summers. I didn't really see that
but it may have been, but it didn't matter.
But it's from the edge of the house, so it's not from, like, the greatest spot, and there's no one else really around other than Summers, who's slightly inside of him, and Mann is sitting on his post, more or less, and in the right angle, watching the entire play develop, and just doesn't get his pad down. It goes under his right pad and in, and you could see like his reaction, like he threw his head back, like, I don't think I've ever done that in my life.
It was real bad, and it was one of those where it was a lot like, in my mind, the Ronnie Bell drop against Penn State, where my initial reaction is less of like, whatever about the team or whatever, and more just like feeling bad for the player, because...
Well, it's the Jordan Lewis play at the end of the Orange Bowl, where he never gives up fades and gets beaten by this guy, and it's like, well, there's your 1 in 100.
Yeah, at least that was a good play, you know, from the opponent. I mean, this is... he's from, you know, outside the circle, shooting a shot that goes like 5 miles an hour. I mean, it's a very soft saucer shot in on net. I mean, it wasn't a, you know, a laser or anything. And he sees it all the way.
Yeah.
And it goes in. And, you know, that just can't go in. And he'll be the first one to tell you that.
Yeah.
So,
and we didn't say this, but earlier,
You know, the BTN guy talked, it was just constantly like, oh, I think that was deflected. Let's take a look. And maybe it, but the thing was, when you watch it on replay, the puck doesn't knuckle. The puck doesn't change direction. The puck doesn't really change velocity. If it was touched, it just elevated a slight amount.
Yeah, it didn't go to a different place.
No. It was still on its trajectory. It might have slowed it down a little bit, but that's not the problem. Starsman was too slow to get to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if it was even faster, the puck would have gone in faster.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, I went down and it fluttered over my shoulder.
Yeah, no, it was not like that at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, Michigan's not going to win many games in the NCAA tournament if Mann is giving up those goals.
No, and that's not...
They're not going to win many games in this tournament, and they didn't.
When was the last time he gave up a goal like that?
I don't know.
Like we referenced the one against Minnesota where he like awkwardly stumbled across the crease.
Yeah, that was
like
bad
he was drunk
too.
Or something. But like, but that was just, I mean, who knows? He maybe got his skate caught or something. But this is just going into
a
butterfly.
And the other thing was that, you know, Ranta was the last guy in the zone. They had had a good shift, and then his teammates had left.
Yeah.
And he's just throwing it at the net to go off.
Yeah.
And it goes in.
Yep, and it was right after, I think, Raby had the puck in his skates a few times that could have gotten it cleared, and, I mean, Michigan had chances to sort of get out, they didn't, and then this happens, and it was like, if you look at over the entire period, like, other than maybe the special teams, but you look at the offense, you look at the defense, you look at the goaltending, like, each part of the team had chances to end this game or to play their part, and you had sort of the breakdown by Power, the breakdown on the clears by Raby, the man goal, the, you know, odd man rushes they didn't finish, and it was the entire team had a chance to nail this coffin shut, and they just couldn't do it, and it came back to bite them. And you were like somewhat encouraging going into overtime, saying, well, you know, Michigan's gotten chances and think that they could win. And I didn't argue with that because I think that they did. But it just really felt like the air came out of Michigan's balloon when that puck went in, for maybe not good reason, because they were still in a really good 50-50 game. But like, it just looked like they had given up the losing goal and not the tying goal.
But they got some chances in the early overtime, and Minnesota got some chances, and then you have this 2 or 3 minute stretch where Michigan cannot clear. And
again,
you know, Minnesota is kind of like an elephant sitting on you when they're in the offensive zone, because they're just everywhere. They're crushing you in the corners. I mean, they are so good off the cycle, and their forwards know how to keep the zone. Their defense know how to keep the zone. But that hurt Michigan in the games last weekend. You know, Wolverines got to get a little bit better about clearing. So, and, you know,
you didn't like the last goal.
I didn't love it because it's a shot, you know, rebounds are rebounds, depends on the situation. But, you know, my instinct seeing that rebound is that I thought it went off his pad. You know, that's what those big juicy rebounds tend to be. And it didn't. It went off his glove on a shot he saw all the way. And you don't want to give up rebounds off your glove. You want to get, and the ones you do, you want to be in front of you, and then you put the trapper down.
Right. Which he does sometimes, but does that.
Yeah.
He control, like a controlled rebound.
Yeah. And that was not a controlled rebound off his glove.
Right.
And then it goes right to the right spot. And also, you know, Keaton Pearson apparently doesn't know where he is on the ice when he's just standing there and the guy goes right around him and gets the rebound, but whatever.
And that's kind of like what I think is just like, the mentality was just kind of broken at that point. And that happens. I mean, you've seen it in different sports and different games, and it's probably happened to you and when you've played and when I've played and all that stuff. And I get it. It's just that this was a situation where you're playing a game against a team that's slightly higher seeded that has, you know, beaten you 3 out of 4 times this year. And this is like part of the, hey, we're here to show that even though we dropped some games to teams that we shouldn't have throughout the year, whereas Minnesota and Wisconsin didn't, we're still just every bit as good. And they were for, you know, 40, 50
minutes.
They
were for the whole game. I mean, that was a very even game.
Gave it away, and it's just, that's, I think,
the I mean, you look at it, part. Michigan got some great chances. They finished 2 of theirs. Minnesota got some great chances. They finished 2 of theirs. And they got a goal that they shouldn't have. That's how you lost 3-2.
Yep. Well, so now we're on to the NCAA tournament. And,
this is last show before the selection Sunday.
Which is on
Sunday.
We're good with the comedy on this, on the hockey cast. And there's not a scenario that Michigan misses the tournament, is there?
Unless it's that one guy from USCHL running
your
the...
buddy. Would you call him a numbskull?
I don't remember. Something about a zombie, I think, too. But anyway, I mean, Michigan to me is a lock, but they've never had a committee before, so we'll see.
I mean, if you put Buchagras on it, he'll probably make him like a 1 seed or a high 2.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan will be in the 2-3 range most likely. And, you know, it kind of, I mean, one of the tough things is that this is, I mean, you were talking about this with the NHL this year, where none of the divisions are playing each other.
Yeah.
So we don't really know how good any teams are.
Right.
And that's the same thing here. Yeah. I mean, we don't know how good the Big Ten is. We don't know how any of the good the other conferences are. We can go off past heuristics. We can go off of, you know, what they look like this year, the eye test, how good their players are in terms of NHL caliber. But I don't really know. I mean, Boston College seems good, but they could be frauds. The whole Big Ten could be frauds. We don't know.
Well,
I mean, it's,
I don't think, yeah.
They probably aren't.
I think the Big Ten is pretty
It's safe. Tough for me to say who we want in this tournament when we haven't, no one's played anybody. So,
well, you've just played yourselves.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't tell you if North Dakota is better than Boston College or this team's better than this other team when they're from different leagues and there's been no intra-conference, you know, inter-conference
But you also
play.
Know that those teams have a bunch of NHL draft picks.
Yeah. What I would say is that if somehow Minnesota State gets a number one seed, that's where you want to be.
Even though Minnesota State, and you know, Minnesota State, though, like they don't give up goals.
They don't, they score a million goals and they don't give up anything, but somehow the WCHA never does anything in the tournament. So I am the chief WCHA hater. So
is that a position?
Yeah.
Is that an elected position?
I just,
or were you appointed?
I just think that traditionally the ECAC and the WCHA are mostly paper tigers.
Speaking of the ECAC, do you know how many teams are left in that
three.
Conference? There are three. Is that a so? Here's I was talking to my dad because I called him on my drive home today, and we were just talking about the hockey game, and he's like, you know, is Michigan to make the tournament? I was like, yeah, and he's like, well, what's the setup? And I said, well, there's 6 auto bids, and then I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, you have the Atlantic Hockey bid that's going to basically be a bid stealer, and then I was like. And then the ECAC is basically a bid stealer, too, because there's only 3 teams left in that conference.
Well, you know, Quinnipiac, if they're the team that wins the ECAC tournament, they were going to get in regardless. The weird thing is what happens, because now, normally to be a bid stealer, you have to make a run, you know, like Georgetown, the Big East tournament last week.
Yeah.
This year, the potential bid stealer from the ECAC doesn't have to make a run. They have to just beat the other terrible team from the ECAC and then beat Quinnipiac in one game.
So Atlantic Hockey. So Atlantic Hockey is the only one that's probably going to be kind of, yeah, you guys shouldn't be here, but you're here every year
that's
anyway.
That's what it is every year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't really know who Michigan wants or who they don't want. There's no real way to know what teams are good and what teams aren't because they haven't played anybody.
I'd like to avoid Duluth.
Yeah, well, Duluth has the magic.
That's what I mean.
Duluth is kind of like when the Canadiens won the Cup in 93 and they won, what was it, 11 straight overtime games in their playoff run. Like, it just defies all logic that Duluth won back-to-back titles and it just never loses games in this ultra luck-based thing, right? Like,
apparently.
They're the Oilers winning the draft lottery 5 times in 7 years or whatever.
No, they're not, because the Oilers haven't even... Have they won a... I think they won one playoff series
yeah,
in, like, 10 years.
Yeah, they choked the other one away, but, I mean... Yeah, Duluth are, they're cursed, but the good way. Charmed? So, what's the opposite of a curse?
Probably Charmed. Or is that a show?
I don't know. I'm not much into magic, so.
So you don't have the magic in you?
Anyway, Duluth, they did something to then win these games. So avoid Duluth. Probably don't want to be with North Dakota, but like...
Well, they're not going to... I mean, like Denver, you'd have to be a four seed,
Denver
right?
just took North Dakota to overtime, and like Denver's not very good. So it's just, in hockey, you can beat anybody. So your draw doesn't really matter.
Sure. I guess my point is like Michigan isn't going to get North Dakota because they're not going to be a four, I don't think.
Well, I'm not saying the first round. I mean, in their bracket. I would much rather take Boston College or, of course, Minnesota State.
You'd rather have BC?
Yes.
Because...
I just...
Because you're a Sens fan and North Dakota has a Sens, which means all their prospects are good.
What I'll say is, you know, the tournament's random. And the tournament doesn't tell you who the best teams are. It tells you who won the coin flips. And maybe it'll be your lucky day when you reach the tournament. And we'll see what happens. The one thing I'm very interested in is seeing how the Big Ten does. Because it would not surprise me if Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan are all in the Final Four, or Frozen Four, rather.
No, and for a lot of the year, kind of until Michigan's sort of like bad game against Ohio State, like they were, all three of those teams were like top five.
I mean, I think those three teams plus Dakota and Boston College are probably the big five.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of thinking that too. I mean,
But again, nothing matters. It could be the other, you know, they could all lose in the first round on a, you know, deflection. Who knows? So we'll see what the draw is, but Michigan's probably in, and then we'll go from there.
And we'll be back next week with the results and the preview.
And who are you picking to win your basketball bracket?
I don't do brackets.
Picking Gonzaga like everyone else?
Is everyone picking Gonzaga?
Yeah, everyone's basic this year.
Are you going to pick Gonzaga? You can't.
Probably.
One of my
brother's two favorite teams are Gonzaga and Villanova.
So
he's been believing in those teams for years. He was a Villanova fan long before they won the national title.
The year when everyone was like hating on him because I shot too many threes for a long period
of time. 2013, 2014, when they used to bomb out in the first round every year, second round. You know, they'd get like a two seed and then they lose to the eight or the seven, you know, that kind of thing.
See, I remember Gonzaga's initial run through the tournament where they were like one of the original Cinderellas.
And he liked Gonzaga back when they had...
He wasn't alive then.
Not the Adam Morrison days.
No. That was like 10 years afterwards. I'm talking about like 99, like the early, like pre-Mark Few.
Okay, no.
Were you alive then?
He first liked Gonzaga when they had Kelly Olynyk, right? He was on Gonzaga.
Yeah, but that's recent. I'm talking like Dan.
My brother
Dickow.
Was born in 2007. Like, those were some of his first basketball memories.
Did you watch him before then?
Gonzaga?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Morrison is like my frame of reference for Gonzaga's early years. Because he was one of those punchable faces in college basketball. He had that terrible mustache.
When
they got eliminated, he was crying on the court, and I didn't like that. 8-year-old me didn't like that.
Oh, come on. You got to care, man.
What I'll say is that I like that Michigan is now the nobody believes in us team. That none of the analysts anywhere are picking Michigan to make the Final Four.
Do you think Livers plays at all?
No.
Not 1 minute?
Nope.
In any round, even if they make it far enough?
Maybe they trot him out there with a walking boot on.
He just like hobbles. Are you going to pick Michigan?
To make the Final Four?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the region.
They have a good bracket.
I like the region. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to have Loyola beat Illinois in the second round. That's what I'm trying to decide.
Oh, that's interesting.
There's got to be some upsets. Everyone's bracket is just Baylor, Gonzaga, Illinois, and then Alabama. That's everyone's bracket.
Well, but
like
do you
everyone
know why?
It's all groupthink this
because,
year.
No, it's because the tournament is actually being seeded more properly than it used to be in the past. And so now they're taking enough analytics into consideration that you're not going to see those, like, I think, as wide range of upsets early on. I mean, it's not like they're not going
to
exist.
I'm not saying early on. I'm just saying those are the people are picking to make the Final Four. And it's all just the same chalk over and over again, which it might be.
Is that boring for you?
Well, remember only... So here's what everyone does. They remember that fact that only 4-1 seeds have made the Final Four once, which was 2008. So everyone knows they have to pick 1-1 seed not to make it. And this year, you have Michigan on a silver platter, right? The team that's getting into the tournament. So everyone says, oh, that's our team.
So if you want to win your pool, you pick Michigan to make the Final Four.
And you pick Gonzaga to lose early. Yeah.
Ooh. Is there someone that can beat them?
There's money to be made in control. Well, also, by the way, the Sheeple are picking Michigan to make the Final Four. That was in Brian's UV today.
Oh, the Sheeple are?
Yeah. like just general people filling out brackets. They're all picking Michigan. I'm talking about Jay Billis and people like that.
Do you respect Jay Billis's opinion?
I ran into him in the Chrysler Tunnel one time.
Was he nice?
He was huge, but...
Okay, but like...
He's like 6'10". He's big.
Is that tall?
I think so.
Do you think
so.
He has one of those Phil Jackson chairs that's just like bigger than everyone else's chair because like he can't sit in a normal person chair?
I don't know. I'm interested to see this tournament. I don't like that it's now Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
No, I have to probably take Monday afternoon off of work because of this. Of course, I would have had to take Thursday or Friday afternoon off.
Yeah, well, you can come to baseball with me on Friday.
I don't know why you're doing that.
Someone had to step up and take it. And Illinois is a decent team, so that should be interesting. And baseball's off to a strong start.
No, baseball
we'll
is...
We'll recap baseball and softball next week.
We could get into some of that. We will need some time.
We'll need content next
some
week.
Some content.
We'll have basketball
we'll break,
to talk
we'll
about.
Break down the whole bracket, the hockey bracket.
Yeah.
So come back next week, please.
Senior Michigan Hockey Cast 3.17 for Alex Tree and David Nasternak. Come back next week for brackets, basketball, and baseball. Did go to CeCe's Pizza, though.
Oh, it's CeCe's?
Apparently.
Oh, yeah. I know what CeCe's is.
Okay. I didn't.
Oh.
And Miller had only seen it from commercials.
Oh, okay. Well, now what you're saying makes so much more sense.
Did you think I was just describing, you know,
I thought you
Chuck
actually
e. Cheese
went
without
into Chuck E. Cheese
Chuck
and
Cheese?
Didn't tell me the name of it.
Okay.
And you were too embarrassed to say that you went to Chuck E. Cheese.
I don't think I've
ever... So you're like, oh, we went to this place. It's kind of like Chuck E. Cheese, except it's actually
I don't think in my whole life I've ever been to Chuck E. Cheese.
I used to go for birthday parties when in the 80s.
I had a teacher that was the Chuck E. Cheese, like, mascot.
I think they were robots.
Did you see the one that got, like... Didn't you see that last week?
What?
Someone found an animatronic Chuck E. Cheese, like, in the desert. And it's just, like, the metal wiring now.
What?
It's horrifying. This was a story last week.
No, I did not.
Someone found the like decaying Chuck E. Cheese in the desert. And
so you went to CeCe's Pizza.
Okay.
So CeCe's is just like cheap pizza that is... So the draw of it is that you don't have to get one kind of pizza.
That's what I told you. You pay $5 and then you come in and you eat as much as you want.
See,
of whatever you want. It's a buffet.
Right.
It's like Golden Corral, yeah. Right?
Did you get any of the chocolate
you
pizza?
You take your children, you pay them at the door,
Golden
and then
Corral.
They can run wild and ransack the restaurant. And
Golden Corral.
You get 30 minutes of free time.
But I don't think... Well, did you get any of like the chocolate fudge pizza?
No.
There's like dessert pizza.
I don't think that was out while I was there.
Oh. So, your buddy had never seen... He'd never been there? He just saw
He had
reviews.
Seen many commercials from his time
So, this
when
place has good Yelp reviews?
It had decent Yelp reviews.
You should run your restaurant choices by me next time, and I can be like, you don't want to go to CeCe's.
I didn't know what was a better pizza place to go to, so...
What?
Everything was...
It was Friday, and you didn't go to Culver's.
Anything safe.
Is our relationship over? Like,
okay.
It was Friday, and you
I
didn't
went
go
on
to
Saturday.
Culver's.
I went on Saturday.
So is it like church for Catholics where like, oh, I didn't go Saturday, but as long as I go Sunday morning, it's okay?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. We should probably talk about the depressing Minnesota game.